Funding for the Hinckley Report and this podcast is provided in part by the Cleone Peterson Eccles Foundation Fund, Merit Medical, AARP Utah, and by contributions to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hinckley Report, your weekly political roundup. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and leave us a five-star review.
Good evening, and welcome to the Hinckley Report. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. Covering the week, we have Doug Wilkes, executive editor of the Deseret News, Mara Carabello, president of the Exoro Group, and Robert Gerke, reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune. So glad to be with you all tonight. There's a lot of stuff happening in politics, but really I want to start talking about some aftermath of some recent things with our parties. The caucus night, I'm going to start with you, Doug, if that's all right. So we had our caucus night, still a lot of controversy surrounding what happened that night, and a lot of thoughts about where we're going to go for the next election cycle.
Well, clearly there was a problem. There was only 9% turnout for the caucus for Republicans. That compares to 29% in 2016, 49% in 2020. And if you recall back then, the whole thing was, how do we increase voter turnout? They went to a mail-in ballot, and now we're all the way to the point where, wow, we've regressed. So the question is, why did we regress and what can we do about it?
Yeah. So, Mara, that's what's interesting about what happened now. This year was a presidential preference poll, right, which was intended, at least from the party, to suggest more people would participate, that more people would come to their caucuses. We have a lot more participation overall. That certainly wasn't the case. Why is that?
You know, I think the parties have to decide if they want a party build or if they want a brand build and bring in Republican voters. And I don't know that they're always the same thing. And how you could tell the difference is, if I need to drive somewhere, stay for 2 to 3 hours, the harder you make it for me, the less inclined I am to do the activity. So does the party want to continue to sort of require a lot of participation, in which case you'll get probably very knowledgeable and very committed people? Or do they want to open it up and have more voices being heard? And they keep pushing and pulling on this issue of, where do we get our fealty? What are we doing? The other note I'm going to give is, I will continue to advocate that local politics is very interesting. And we wrapped up this whole evening about the presidential election. And if we would cover more in the news, and if we would talk more about a really competitive U.S. Senate race we have, all of those delegates were slotted that night. And all of the, we have great state house races. And if we could draw more attention to multiple layers of civic involvement and not just the presidential race, I think we could get a little more engaged.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I mean, Doug asked the question of, you know, we need to answer why turnout was low. I think it's a feature, not a flaw. I mean, I think caucuses are designed to be exclusionary. Like tomorrow's point, it's hard to go to these things. It's hard for people who have kids, who have work, who have other commitments, and then do they want to go to deal with this? We saw the chaos that was, you know, unfolding in many of these caucuses because the registration system was bad, the vote counting system was bad. There were fundamental problems in it, and we've known that, we've seen this for decades, honestly, that caucuses don't have the same level of turnout, the same level of involvement as vote by mail has shown us it does. And so the party needs to decide, does it, to Mara's point, do they want to include people? Do they want to expand the involvement? Or do they want to keep the power in the hands of a small group of people? And time after time after time, every time they choose caucuses, it's keeping the power in a small group of people. And if that's what they want, that's what they want. But I think the voters need to ask themselves why that's what they want.
Mm-hmm. You go back to what happened in 2020, which you have 49% of the turnout, which was because people were just submitting a ballot, which is why we get the lieutenant governor involved just a bit, because she had something to say about this. And Doug, I'd like to get your feedback on this quote from Deidre Henderson about where we might go in the future. This is what she said. I applaud all Utahns who seek to have a say in who we elect and how we elect them. I encourage voters to communicate with their party leaders and legislators about any changes they'd like to see for next time.
Well, she clearly made a point that, look, my office didn't have anything to do with these caucuses. We were involved with the Democratic, you know, with the primary. So there's a degree of separation there. But her point is valid. You know, is there outrage by the electorate? if you weren't represented, do you want to raise your voice? The problem that I have with this whole process is it builds apathy. We're trying to fight against apathy. If I myself was driving to a caucus and I see a line that I know is a mess and I'm not going to get in, I'm probably not going to stop my car and get out and go do it. You'll say, well, I'll wait till the general election, or I'll wait till, you know, I have a different opportunity or a different voice. And that's if you even know the process is going on. We trained everyone in Utah to wait the couple weeks before the primary election that I'm going to get a ballot in the mail. We had people calling our office, aren't we going to get a ballot? Aren't we going to get a ballot? Because they didn't even know that there was going to be a
and
caucus.
And let's talk about how you can see that on caucus night is that the Democrats did go to a primary. So Lieutenant Governor and the clerks managed that process. They got sort of 70% turnout, and it was a pretty good showing considering there was a non-competitive race with Joe Biden being the assumed. Here, we had a good race with Nikki Haley and Trump, and the Republicans only turned out 15,000 more people. So you had a pretty good turnout when it was open and accessible and run by the elections office. But I do think we need to start asking. Count My Vote brought up this interesting issue of what's the difference between a party, which is a private entity, and the state elections office. We did have a senator post-caucus sort of open that question up of, hey, maybe we, the legislature, should be looking at parties. What's been interesting is the Republicans have, in the legislature, have been the ones very much saying, no, the parties are the parties. We shouldn't instruct what they're doing.
It's such an interesting point. People often think that these things are connected so much that they're the same, which they definitely are not.
Well, and this time it didn't matter, right? We all knew who the winners were going to be. It was going to be Donald Trump. He was going to be the nominee. And even if he happened to not win, he was going to eventually be the nominee anyway. So the consequences this time were minimal. But going forward, that's not maybe always going to be the case. Also, I think it's just generally good to expand involvement as much as you can. And, you know, and also I just want to say that caucuses are, as I said, exclusionary, but also the people who are disenfranchised the most are women and lower income people and minorities. They are not, the statistics show that they don't attend their caucuses, they don't attend conventions as much as white older male like me. So I think, you know, we need to look at that and we need to expand the playing field and have it give more people a voice. I think that's good for democracy and I think that's the direction the party should be going.
Can I add one thing to that? Yeah, picture someone in their home taking care of children, a single mother or a single father, and you can fill out a ballot, but if it comes upon you and you have to get a babysitter and you have to dedicate hours and you're not quite comfortable with the process, you're not going to engage in the process. This is, Robert used the term control. This is a question of control. There are some within each party that says, here's the best way for us to control the outcome. And there are others who say, no, we need to expand and give everyone a voice. How do we get participation? But there's not unanimity of opinion on what they want to do.
Uh-huh. Since we look at what happened here and the control did have an impact on participation, Mara, it does have also a resulting look at who came out as winners in this one. I want to talk about that for just a minute because it's interesting because Nikki Haley edged out former President Donald Trump in Salt Lake County and in Davis County. And it was very close in Cache, Summit, and Utah County. Talk about that dynamic just a little bit. You have a turnout as part of it, but what bigger dynamic are we looking at?
I mean, Utah has set the standard of the Republicans at least having a discussion. I mean, Nikki Haley did better in Utah, all but for one state in which she won. And I think it's because if you look at past cycles, we have not been very excited about firebrands like Donald Trump. We sort of like a more nuanced position and something. She's been very policy focused. I think that fits what Utah voters say that they want. But it was interesting in the turnout. The question I think we start playing with is, what does it mean, if anything, for a general election, right? I mean, if it says, was it an indicator of anything? Well, I don't think any of us suspect that those Haley voters, their next stop on the train is Biden. I think that's probably too far away for them. They'll probably stick with the party that they came to, or maybe a third party. I think her high performance bodes well for how Utah's process. But, and you see this in poll after poll, all of us are feeling a little stuck with the choice we have in Biden and Trump.
Well, how does that result, Robert? Because the No Labels Party has come out this week saying they will field a candidate. How would that be received?
Yeah, just briefly, those counties, it doesn't sound like a lot in numbers in terms of the ones Haley won, but that's where the people live, so that those are important counties. The no labels thing I think is fascinating. I don't think it necessarily is a big factor in Utah. We've seen in the past Evan McMullen jump in. He ran a third party race, got a considerable number of votes, but didn't affect the outcome. I think what's interesting with no labels is how, which states does it get on the ballot in, and are they swing states? I mean, because in a close election like we're anticipating this time again, you know, a couple percentage points in a swing state actually could make a difference. I think it also matters who they pick. You know, there's been talk of John Huntsman. I doubt that he'll get in because he got this new job at the credit card company. Sounds like he's processing credit cards. That's not what he's doing. but he said he's not running. It's Joe Manchin's out. So it, part of it depends on who they actually field as a candidate. But, you know, again, in a close election, a point here, a point there, in a state like Wisconsin, Michigan, places like that, it actually could have an impact on the
Get a little wonky on third-party candidates. One fun fact about Utah is Robert Kennedy has qualified for the Utah ballot, and so has No Labels. No Labels, interestingly, has qualified with a point with a place positioning in 24 states, and they continue to keep going. So, looking at third-party being either a spoiler or whatever you want to think of them, Utah has qualified two non-primary candidates for our general election.
Can I add one thing to that? I mean, we had. We had Nikki Haley in our office 5 days before the caucus, and she kept talking about this statistic, 70% don't want Donald Trump or Joe Biden. So I think it is time to have a conversation about, is the two-party system yielding the result that the majority of Americans want? Is there some other way to access more than a Republican and a Democrat? And over time, there's been, you know, throughout history, trying to get a third party candidate, but it always starts from the position of they can never win. So is it about money that needs to change? Is it about process that needs to change? Because there are people who want to cast a vote for someone other than perhaps a Republican or a Democrat, but it becomes a vote that they know is not going to necessarily make a difference unless it's a spoiler vote.
I'm with Doug on this. I think we need to really look at the two-party system. Is it giving us what we want? Because it's not. People are not, you know, like light switches. These issues are complicated and nuanced. It's not an on or off thing. It shouldn't be blue or red. And so I think, you know, yes, I think a third or fourth or fifth party would be great. But also the two parties run the show. They make the rules. They make it harder for people to get in. They control the money, and as Doug said, you know, sometimes they can't win. And we always have this thing where we start running a third-party candidate for president. We don't run them for city council. We don't run them for state legislature. We don't run them for governor. We don't build the groundwork for a third party. So maybe we'll start seeing that because of the people are so disaffected with the two choices that they have this time.
So, Samara, this was a little bit what we saw with Evan McMullen. It was an alternative choice, which is people just wanted the alternative choice. Do any of these potential third parties seem to be able to capitalize on that? Is that where we are? The options are so, you know, that's not what we're looking for, so we will go vote for someone else. Is this that moment? Have we hit it? Is it even better than it was for Evan McMullen?
Well, to Doug's comments, it gets too complicated for us because, so you're looking at universally in polling right now, Robert Kennedy is averaging about 15%. That is as good as we have seen this early. And we also know that No Labels, an interesting component to No Labels is they are somewhat a Never Trumper organization. So the problem is, just even by my commentary, we don't view them as the front runner potential winner. We start to say, what's their overall impact on the race? But I think what Robert said is incredibly important and worth repeating. If we don't change our habit, our outcomes will never change. And so at what point, I think Evan McMullen had a great showing in Utah, although not nationally. And I think we do need to start considering, it's always an interesting impact on a mirror. We complain about politics all the time, but the longer I'm in it, I do see it as a reflection of us. And so instead of externalizing what we don't like about politics, maybe thinking about what behavior should we change? Should we take a risk on a third party? Should we vote for someone who's not in our traditional party? Should we mix up our point of view on a brand label and stay more with our values and stay more with the issues that we care about?
Well, it does allow you to vote your conscience, right? If you have Nikki Haley, if you have a No Labels candidate, you can make a determination, well, I'm pretty sure that Donald Trump's going to carry Utah. But for me personally, I will vote, you know, to speaking generically, not telling you my vote, but I'll be able to vote for this person or this person. I'll vote my conscience. I'll feel okay. And if enough people do that, then your neighbor's going to say, wow, we're all not just thinking alike. And maybe 4 years from now, 8 years from now, maybe something does start to move.
And wouldn't it be amazing to have ranked choice voting where you could actually vote for the candidate you want, whether it's a libertarian or no labels or whatever, and still be able to have an influence on the outcome of the election? I think this is why people are making this argument, because there is so much dissatisfaction with the two-party system.
I want to get to this point, from Mara, about the reflection of us to a poll that you did, all right, Doug, which is so interesting because you did this, the Deseret News with Harris X. And the question was, to what extent does Donald Trump reflect your personal moral values? I'm curious about why you asked the question that way, particularly given a couple of these results. Among Republicans, this is for Donald Trump, 38% said a great deal, 41% said some, 12% said not much, 9 said none, as opposed to the Democrats. Does Donald Trump reflect your moral values? 11% said a great deal. This is the Democrats. 13% not some, 9% not much, and 67% none. Explain this to us through this question of moral values.
Well, this started with Iowa. Iowa Republicans had a choice. So here you have these series of Republican candidates, and they went overwhelmingly with Donald Trump. So we said, that's so interesting. What is driving this? Why? There's not a default. The election wasn't decided yet. This was the beginning. They know they set the stage. And so Donald Trump is appealing in some way. So we wanted to try and ask a character question, a values question. What I think this determines is there's more mining to be done. Mm-hmm. Because if you're talking about character, people say, yeah, I don't like his character, but he'll do what I want him to do. Values, how are they interpreting values? I would prefer the values of what he's doing compared to what the Democrats are doing. Or I don't like where the country's been for the past, you know, 4 years. It'll be better, you know, it was more expensive to buy eggs, more expensive to buy bread, more expensive to buy meat. Gas went up, it's come down a bit. But anyway, the inflation question drives a lot. So I think we really have to determine character versus values. And I'm not sure we got 100% at it with this poll.
Thoughts about that, Mara?
Yeah, I mean, I love the follow-up of what is the difference between values, morals, and character, and how people interpret it. I think it is a reflection of our politics. Our politics right now are highly emotionally driven, and so your emotions also probably need to align in many people's mind with your political choices, because we're speaking so emotionally, and it's a lot of us and them right now, and I'm saving things, you're destroying things, is the language. Given that, it would make sense that people would say, I'm inclined to like his policy, so therefore it would make sense to me at a personal level to align with his morals, or perhaps better said, probably his policies.
Yeah, I think we used to live in a world where our morals and our values drove our politics, and now our politics are driving our morals and values, I think. And it's probably not a good place for us to be as a country, frankly. The distaste and resentment for the other guy, thinking they're an immoral person, versus just disagreeing with them on policy is, I think, a bad road for us to be going down. I think it also shows that people don't necessarily care that much if they view the person as moral. In the case of Donald Trump, obviously, with the affairs and the fraud and things like that, people are willing to set that aside because the other guy they think is worse from a policy standpoint. So I think it's a fascinating question, and it says a lot more about us as Utah voters than it does about the candidates necessarily. And I think it shows that, you know, there's this dissonance that has always maybe existed to some extent, but now it's, bigger than ever.
We're trying to frame now, you know, what do we do as a media group? You know, what does Robert do? What does the Deseret News do? And now we know who the candidates are. We have lots of experience with the candidates. We better find out what the people are thinking and how they're thinking. What are the best strategies to do that?
Interesting to know if we have a different standard of the who part at a local level than we do at a congressional or a presidential level. Are we still holding on to the individual counts or character counts at a local level, where I agree with Robert, that seems to have gone away as a calculation in national politics.
And to tie it back into what we were talking about before, I think maybe the morals and values might matter more if there were other viable options for people. I think, you know, if you could get a candidate who is moral and has values that you share and also policies that you share, you might vote for that person. But, you know, we've seen now we've got the two.
Before we leave, actually, I want to get you your comment on the same question you asked about President Joe Biden, to see how that changes just a little bit. 66% of Republicans said does not reflect their moral values, as opposed to Democrats, 43% said they, it does reflect a great deal.
It makes sense to me. If you start to talk to, go have a conversation, and if you talk to someone who's a Trump supporter, the first thing they'll say after you do a litany of whatever you're complaining about, they'll say, well, what about Joe Biden? What about his son? What about what's occurred here, here, and here? And they'll think that the Democrats are just attacking Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. If you go to a Biden supporter, they'll say, you know, Biden at least steadied the arc. He's trying to do the right thing. And then the Trump supporter will go, really? What about this, this, and this? So I think the way you described it, Robert, is really smart. It's like we've changed now that here's the politics. Now we have to layer that on top of character and value.
The analysis seems more clear, seeing the equal response on Biden as Trump, as the calculus is, I'm good, you're bad. So therefore, when you ask Robert, he says, no, I'm good, she's bad. And that just seems to have been the analysis.
This poll is a starting point, I think, Robert.
Well, and I think it would be interesting if you're going to ask a follow-up question to ask how people see Mitt Romney, if he shares their values, because he used to be the choir boy, right? He used to be Utah's favorite son, and now he's sort of on the outs. There's been a jihad declared against him by Donald Trump. He wants him out of the party and, you know, out of politics forever. And so, you know, again, I think people still share Mitt Romney's values, but again, they've fallen out of favor with his politics and his policies.
And because we continue to conflate the terms character, morality, values, and policy, those are conflating, albeit very different calculations. I think that's where the interesting follow-up would be.
And we haven't even talked about the Senate race. We have a very interesting Senate race. You have pretty strong candidates, and there are slices of the Republican Party. So which slice is going to prevail in this election?
Very interesting commentary. I want to talk about a couple pieces of legislation, some issues that are happening in the state of Utah. But one that we've been following a little bit, we're going to start seeing a little more visually, Mara, is we officially, it's just become official this week, have a new state flag. Talk about that, because it wasn't without some controversy.
It wasn't without some controversy. It's been going on for a while. So here are my takeaways. I think that by and large, there's a huge coalescing around Utahns that say it looks great. I love it. And I'm good. Give a shout out to what I think is a very super minority who did a great job exercising their objectives. They organized, they got a lot of press, they went and filed a lawsuit, they exercised all of their ability to have that conversation. I do think the majority like the flag, or at most are agnostic to it. And I think it'll be nice to sort of move beyond. And remember, there was a caveat in the legislation that said, if you really love the old flag, then fly that as well.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I mean, I was skeptical of the new flag when they started the process. I'm like, why are we wasting our time with this? I think it's turned out great. But to Mara's point, I think I agree with everything she said. I think the small minority managed to gin up a lot of noise. And, you know, it was pretty clear from the get-go that it wasn't actually going to go their way. They weren't going to get their old flag back, although they can still fly the old flag. I don't know that before this whole thing started, anybody really cared what the flag looked like or even knew what the flag looked like. I mean, that was Senator Dan McKay would say he'd go meet with people and ask them to point out, you know, if they want to keep the seagull. And he's like, well, there's not a seagull on it. So, you know, so it's at least maybe we've had a discussion about it. You know, we've got to a point where one side's prevailed, it appears, and we're going to have this flag and it looks good on T-shirts. And it's mostly just branding. That's what a flag is.
Well, right? And one thing it did show is that sort of my day job is communications. And one of the key things we focus on are symbols. Symbols are in many ways the most powerful form of communicating with each other. And I think that's what this unexpectedly tapped into, is not even sort of the art of it, the graphic design of it, but it started to represent these symbols for people and how they were relating much beyond. And so it does show how important symbology and symbols are for us.
Go ahead, Doug.
It's nice use of the word symbology. I appreciate that. You know, what's the flag? The flag is now the beehive. You have a dominant image. It has great historical significance for Utah. It represents industry. So in that sense, I think it will be important to individuals, whereas the old flag maybe was only important to people who really understood it. And it doesn't eliminate the old flag. So it becomes historical. It becomes progression. And in that case, I think the process, probably now where we are now, it's probably been successful.
Okay, just the final couple seconds on this, Mara. Are we going to see another legal challenge, or is this settled?
I think it's settled. I think you can buy your T-shirt. It's okay.
Okay, we're going to start putting those up. What were you going to say, Robert?
Yeah, I mean, I think there will probably be people who make a run in the legislature to try to get it back. Phil Lyman was sponsoring a bill, I think, to reverse it. I don't think it's going to go anywhere legitimately. And to Doug's point, yes, the beehive is there, but we also have these canyons, mountains, sky. I think it turned out really well. It represents a lot of what Utah is.
It's going to be all over now, all over the state. Thank you for your insights this evening.
Thank you for listening to the Hinckley Report. If you enjoy this podcast and want to help more people find out about it, please rate it and leave us a positive review.